Welcome to the debate. So I want you to imagine this scenario. You are building a secure financial application and you are doing it completely by yourself. You just spent, let's say, the last 6 months writing this absolutely brilliant web dashboard in C# for student loans.
A huge undertaking for one person.
Oh, absolutely massive. But it is perfectly architected. The dependency injection is clean. You know, the components are modular. And then leadership comes to you and says, hey, great job. Now we need it on the App Store and Google Play by next month.
Ouch.
Right? So do you pause your entire life to learn Swift for iOS and Kotlin for Android over the weekend? Or do you bet your entire project on a cross-platform framework?
I mean, that is the literal nightmare scenario for almost every solo developer I know. You're suddenly staring down the barrel of three distinct platforms, three totally different build systems, and you have the immense pressure of securing highly sensitive financial data.
Exactly. And that brings us to the core of our discussion today. We are looking at the critical architectural crossroads facing C# developers who are tasked with moving to mobile as a solo act. The central question we are unpacking is this: should that solo developer rely on .NET MAUI, Blazor Hybrid to maximize their code reuse and just maintain a unified C# ecosystem, or?
Or does the so-called cross-platform promise inevitably leak? Meaning, does pure native development like Swift UI or Jetpack Compose actually become the safer, more predictable choice in the long run?
Yes, exactly. And we are going to ground this deeply in the actual mechanics based on our source material. We'll be tearing apart MAUI's architecture, looking at the physical memory models on the devices, analyzing WebView performance benchmarks, and really getting into the undocumented realities of deployment.
Because when you are dealing with student financial data, the architecture cannot just be convenient for the developer. It has to be completely bulletproof.
Right. So briefly, I will be defending the pragmatic solo developer perspective. I'm arguing that .NET MAUI Blazor Hybrid is the optimal and, frankly, the most realistic choice here.
And I'll be representing the native advocate perspective, arguing that MAUI and Blazor Hybrid introduce crippling dual runtime overhead and web view bloat that ultimately wastes more time than it saves.
Okay, so let me start by outlining my position. For a student financial app managed by a single developer, I firmly believe pragmatism simply has to win. The sheer power of the Blazor Hybrid architecture is just hard to ignore. In this model, your Razor components are running natively in the .NET process on the actual device.
Right, but...
Well, let me just finish this thought. We are not downloading WebAssembly over a network here. The execution is happening right on the device's CPU. The UI is just rendered to a platform web view via a local interrupt channel. That means you can use Razor class libraries to share the exact same UI components, the same dependency injection containers across your web dashboard, iOS, and Android. It massively reduces the surface area for bugs.
I hear the pitch. I do. And it always sounds incredible in a conference presentation. But I'm sorry, I just don't buy that it works like that in production. Let me tell you why.
Go ahead.
The idea of write once, run anywhere is a myth that breaks down the moment you start demanding native-level performance. When you embed a Blazor app inside a MAUI wrapper, you are forcing that solo developer to fight a war on two fronts.
Two fronts.
Yes, you are paying the execution tax of the .NET runtime, and you are paying the incredibly heavy rendering tax of a mobile web view. You skip learning Swift, sure, but now you have to learn how to fight just-in-time compilation bans, configured native AOT, and write complex Android binding libraries just for standard security features.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective. To really understand if this solo developer approach is viable, we have to start at the surface layer, which is the UI. This is what the student interacting with their loan data actually feels.
Okay, let's look at the UI, because the UI layer is where the Blazor Hybrid model shows its deepest structural flaws. Let's examine the actual mechanism of the Blazor web view. You are not rendering native mobile controls. On an iPhone, you are fundamentally rendering HTML and CSS inside Apple's WK web view.
Right.
And on an Android device, you are rendering inside the Android web view. This immediately subjects your application to strict GPU memory constraints and much slower JavaScript engines, which is particularly devastating if your user is on, say, a mid-range Android phone from 3 years ago.
But let's clarify this for developers who are coming from the web. Why exactly is the web view considered slower? If a modern smartphone can render complex websites instantly on Safari or Chrome, why is rendering that exact same HTML inside a MAUI app considered such a massive bottleneck?
That is actually a great question, because it gets to the heart of how mobile operating systems allocate their resources. When you open Safari on an iPhone, the OS gives that app priority access to the Nitro JavaScript engine and maximum memory allowances. But when you embed a WK web view inside a native app wrapper, the OS historically sandboxes it very differently. It restricts the memory footprint.
Okay, but...
Wait, let me give you a concrete example. Imagine your student financial app needs to render a history of 400 student loan transactions. In a pure native app, if you use a recycler view on Android or UI collection view on iOS, the operating system is incredibly smart. It only creates enough visual cells to fill the screen, maybe 10 cells total.
Right, view recycling.
Exactly. As you scroll, it physically recycles those same 10 cells in memory, just swapping out the data strings. It is mathematically guaranteed to hit 60 frames per second. But if you try to render that same list in HTML and CSS inside a web view, the browser engine has to calculate the CSS box model, determine the flexbox layout, and paint the pixels. Even with web virtualization, the web view simply cannot compete with the native OS recycling views at the hardware level. You will get scroll jank.
Okay, I think you are characterizing the Blazor web view as if it behaves exactly like a traditional remote web page making DOM updates via JavaScript. But the mechanics here are fundamentally different.
How so? It's still HTML?
It is. But Blazor web view utilizes a local interrupt channel. It bypasses the network stack completely. There is absolutely no signal or latency here, no payload size limits. The state management, the actual thinking of the app, is running natively in highly optimized C#.
But the rendering is still happening in the DOM. The browser still has to paint it.
Yes, but Blazor gives us incredibly powerful tools to manage that DOM. For those large lists of transactions you mentioned, we have the virtualized component. If we implement that properly and we override the should render lifecycle method in our C# code, we can actively intercept the rendering pipeline.
Intercept it how?
We tell Blazor, hey, this specific transaction card hasn't changed. Do not calculate a new diff. Do not send anything over the interrupt channel. If you just manage your component state correctly, you keep the DOM incredibly lightweight.
I hear you. But a lightweight DOM is still a DOM. You are fundamentally forcing the mobile device to act as a web browser. Let's walk through what actually happens when state changes, step by step. In a native app, a state change directly mutates a property on a native view object in memory. Done. Finished.
Sure.
But in Blazor Hybrid, look at this pipeline. The .NET runtime calculates a component diff in C#. Then, it serializes that diff into a format that can cross the interop boundary. Then, it sends it over to the web view. Then, the web view's JavaScript engine receives it, parses it, and applies it to the DOM. And finally, the browser's layout engine has to recalculate the visual tree and paint the pixels.
It sounds like a lot when you listen out like that.
Because it is a lot. That compounding cost, the .NET diffing plus the serialization plus the web view painting, is a massive pipeline just to update a number on a screen. That is exactly what drops your frame rate.
That's an interesting point, though I would frame it differently, because that pipeline is incredibly optimized in modern .NET. Let's talk about how we can leverage the synchronization context to make it near instant.
Okay.
What if we utilize the Blazor webview.trydispatch async method? Imagine we have a native MAUI background service listening for incoming financial data streams, like a real-time update to the student's available credit. We process all that heavy lifting, the JSON parsing, the data mapping, entirely on a native MAUI background thread.
Right, keeping it off the UI thread.
Exactly. Then we use try dispatch async to safely marshal just the final calculated state change onto the Blazor synchronization context. We are isolating high frequency state changes to leaf components. If we only update the exact text node holding the balance, the browser engine barely breaks a sweat. Don't we achieve near native reactivity without writing a single line of Kotlin?
I appreciate the architecture you just described. It's clever. but it requires immense, unforgiving discipline from a solo developer. If you perfectly isolate your state changes and you perfectly manage your thread dispatching, yes, you might maintain 60 frames per second on a flagship device.
Which is the goal.
But solo developers are under severe deadlines. The moment that developer relies on a slightly too complex CSS grid, or they forget to implement should render on a deeply nested dashboard component, the UI stutters. A pure native developer using Jetpack Compose gets layout optimization and 60 frames per second by default without having to obsessively manage a dual-layered architecture.
It absolutely requires discipline. I will fully concede that. But crucially, it is C-sharp discipline. It is the exact same component lifecycle discipline they are already applying to their web application.
But let me just land this point. They don't have to pause their project for a month to learn the intricacies of the Compose rendering phases or the Swift UI view lifecycle. They just apply their existing knowledge of the Blazor render tree. For a solo developer, leveraging existing knowledge is literally the only way the project ships on time. Okay, but let's look at the hidden cost of leveraging that existing knowledge. Because the cost of this hybrid UI isn't just visual rendering speed, it forces a massive hidden structural burden on the device's physical memory model. And this brings us to what I consider the underworld of Android development.
The underworld? Dramatic, but okay.
It is dramatic because it kills apps. When you run MAUI on Android, you are not just running a single program. You are literally running dual runtimes simultaneously. You have the managed.net mono runtime with its garbage collector, and you have the Android ART, the Android runtime, with its own Java garbage collector.
Right, but this dual runtime model has been the foundation of Xamarin and now MAUI for over a decade. The runtimes communicate. Microsoft has spent years optimizing this exact bridge.
They communicate, yes, but they do not share a unified memory heap. And this introduces what is arguably the most terrifying concept for a web developer moving to mobile, the JNI, or Java Native Interface, Global Reference Table.
I had a feeling we were going here.
We have to go here, because this is where solo projects go to die. Every time a .NET object needs to hold on to an Android Java object, which happens constantly when rendering native UI or accessing device sensors, a JNI global reference is created.
It acts as an anchor.
Exactly. It tells the Android ART garbage collector, hey, do not destroy this Java object because the C-sharp runtime still needs it. But here is the critical, hard-coded limitation of the Android operating system. It caps this global reference table at exactly 51,200 entries.
So, for the web developers listening who might not be deep into Android memory limits, can you explain exactly how a UI element generates these references? Why would we ever actually hit 50,000 of them?
Let's say our solo developer decides they don't want to use Blazor for a specific screen. Instead, they build a native MAUI collection view for a complex financial dashboard. Every single element in that list, every label, every image, every drop shadow, every layout container has a C-sharp wrapper and an underlying Java peer object.
Right.
If you have a list of 100 items and each item has 20 visual elements, that is 2,000 JNI references just for one single screen. Now imagine the user rapidly navigates back and forth between the dashboard, the transaction history, and their profile page.
The references pile up.
They skyrocket. Because the C-sharp garbage collector is notoriously lazy. If the phone has 4 gigabytes of RAM, the Mono GC says, hey, I have plenty of memory, I don't need to run a collection right now. But the JNI table is filling up. 40,000, 45,000, 50,000.
And then it crashes.
When it hits 51,201, you don't get a polite C-sharp exception you can try catch. You get a hard, low-level OS crash. JNIR. Global Reference Table Overflow. The app dies instantly. A solo C-sharp developer who is used to web development, where the V8 engine handles all memory automatically, is going to be staring at a low-level memory dump they have absolutely no idea how to read.
Okay, I completely acknowledge the 51,200 limit. It is a known constraint in the Android ecosystem. But I have to push back hard on the idea that this is a framework death sentence. Hitting that limit is an architectural code smell.
A code smell? It's a fundamental flaw.
No, think about it. if an application is generating 50,000 live peer objects simultaneously, the developer has designed the UI poorly, regardless of the framework they are using. There are established, well-documented mitigation strategies for this exact scenario.
Such as?
First, you flatten the visual tree. Instead of nesting 5 stack layouts just to get the padding right, you use a single grid. Every layout layer you remove practically halves the required peer objects.
Okay, sure, flattening helps.
Second, you absolutely avoid wrapping a collection view inside a scroll view. That is a classic Xamarin mistake that breaks virtualization entirely and forces the engine to render all 1,000 items into memory at once. And third, you utilize properties like item sizing strategy equals measure first item.
Right, to stop dynamic height calculations.
Exactly. It tells the MAUI layout engine to stop calculating the height of every single cell dynamically and just use the first one as a static template for the rest, which drastically reduces memory allocation on the JNI bridge.
But don't you see the problem here? You are listing workarounds for a fundamentally fragile memory bridge. You are literally forcing the developer to design their UI around the limitations of the framework's memory leaks.
Let me use an analogy here, because I think it helps visualize the problem we are actually solving. Think of the JNI limit like a strict customs border between two countries, the C-sharp country and the Java country.
Okay, I'm following.
If you send 50,000 tiny packages, which in our case are complex visual nodes, across that border simultaneously, of course customs will shut down. The infrastructure simply cannot handle that inspection rate.
But as a software architect, isn't the solution simply to manage our payload?
How?
We have native lifecycle hooks for this. We can implement the on-trim memory method in the Android main activity. This is a native OS signal where Android tells the app, hey, memory is getting tight on the device. When we intercept that signal in C#, we can explicitly call gc.collect with the GC collection mode forced flag.
Wait, let me finish. We tell the Java garbage collector to run. We essentially force customs to process the backlog right then and there. We manage the trade route. We don't just abandon it entirely to go write pure Kotlin.
Forcing garbage collection on the UI thread? That is incredibly risky. When you call gc.collect, you are pausing the execution of the entire application.
It's brief?
It doesn't matter how brief it is. The user is mid-scroll, the OS signals memory pressure, your forced GC triggers, and the screen literally freezes for a quarter of a second. You get massive frame drops. You are introducing stutter into a financial app just to clean up memory, because the bridge between the two runtimes is inherently inefficient.
It's a trade-off.
If you were writing this app in pure Kotlin with Jetpack Compose, there is no JNI bridge for the UI. There is one unified heap, one garbage collector, and no artificial 51,000 limit hanging over your head like a guillotine.
That's a fair criticism of the native MAUI UI layer. But let's bring this back to the core architecture we are actually debating today. MAUI Blazor Hybrid.
Right.
WebView, for the bulk of our complex UI, we actually bypass this JNI limit problem entirely for those screens. The HTML DOM elements inside the WebView do not create individual JNI global references. They live safely inside the browser engine's memory space. We only use JNI for the WebView container itself and maybe a few native device sensors. By combining MAUI and Blazor, we actually solve the biggest memory issue of legacy Xamarin.
Okay. That is a fair point about the WebView masking of the JNI allocations. I'll give you that. But that brings us to the next massive problem. You can carefully manage your memory, you can hide your complex UI inside a WebView, but eventually, the illusion of a single, unified C# codebase fractures. We call this the cross-platform leak.
I have always felt the term leak is overly negative. I see it as an escape hatch. It's a feature, not a bug, that we can drop down to native code when we absolutely need to.
It is a leak because the solo developer still has to learn the exact platform-specific paradigms they adopted this framework to avoid in the first place.
Give me an example.
Let me give you a very common one for a financial app. You need a secure PIN pad for login. You decide to use a native MAUI entry control so you can utilize the native numeric keyboard. On Android, by default, an entry control has this prominent colored underline.
Right, the material design underline.
Yes. In a modern, clean UI design, that underline looks terrible. To remove it, the developer cannot just write standard C# or CSS. They have to drop into platform-specific code. They have to write conditional compilation blocks like #ifAndroid, and then write a custom handler that manipulates the android.graphics.drawables.colordrawable.
Yes, they do.
They are literally writing Android Java API concepts, just using C# syntax. They still had to go read the native Android documentation to figure out what a color drawable even is.
I actually love that you brought up the Android underline because it highlights how much better MAUI is compared to the past. Yes, you have to write a platform-specific tweak, but MAUI handlers are a massive architectural upgrade over the old Xamarin Forms custom renderers.
They're still platform-specific.
But they are so much cleaner. In the legacy system, to remove that underline, you had to subclass the entire renderer. It was heavy. It slowed down the app startup. Now, MAUI uses a static property mapper. This means a single property on a control can be altered at runtime without subclassing anything.
Okay.
You literally just append a single lambda function to entryHandler.mapper.appendToMapping. So, to your point about the solo developer's time, I see why you think that's a leak, but if I spend 10 minutes writing a handler mapper to remove an Android underline, or even an hour reading the Android docs to figure it out, isn't that still exponentially faster than maintaining entirely separate Swift and Kotlin code bases for the entire UI layer?
It might be 10 minutes for an underline, but it never stops at just UI tweaks. The cross-platform leak bleeds deeply into deployment and OS-level security. This solo developer has to master iOS entitlements. Do they know what an infoplist is? Do they understand app transport security or ATS?
Let's clarify ATS for the audience because it is crucial for a financial app.
ATS is Apple's network security feature. By default, iOS blocks all non-HTTPS traffic, period. Now, let's say our solo developer is building this app for a specific university, and the app needs to connect to a legacy internal campus API that doesn't have a valid SSL certificate yet, or uses a self-signed one for QA testing.
A very common scenario.
Right. In standard C#, making an HTTP request is easy, but on iOS, the OS hard blocks it. The developer has to go into the iOS-specific info.plist file, write raw XML, and configure NS exception domains dictionaries to allow that specific IP address to bypass ATS. And on Android, it gets even worse. They have to navigate the RH shrinker.
The code shrinker. This is Android's version of optimizing the final package size.
Exactly. R8 is a tool that obfuscates Java byte code to secure it and aggressively strips out unused code to make the app smaller. But R8 does not understand C#. When your .NET app tries to call into an Android Java API via the JNI, R8 might have already deleted that Java method because it thought no one was using it.
Because it couldn't see the C# reference.
Exactly. Your app compiles perfectly on your machine, but crashes the absolute moment you tack a button on a real Android phone. To fix this, the developer has to write custom metadata.xml transformations and progradrules.profiles to explicitly tell the Android compiler which Java classes to keep. My point is this. This solo developer is no longer writing C#. They are acting as a DevOps engineer for two entirely different mobile ecosystems. The cross-platform promise has completely failed them.
You are describing the absolute worst-case scenario of platform interrupt, but you are completely ignoring how much of the deployment and asset pipeline MAUI actually abstracts away perfectly.
Assets are just images.
But they take time. Look at the new single project system in .NET MAUI. In the old days, and even in pure native development right now, if you want an app icon, you have to manually generate dozens of different PNG resolutions. You need add 2x at 3x for iOS, and HDPI, XHDPI, XXHDPI for Android. You have to manage two completely different folder structures.
It's tedious, yes.
It's agonizing for a solo dev. But now, you drop a single SVG file into your shared MAUI project. You tag it in the project file as MAUI icon. You drop your custom fonts in and tag them as MAUI font. When you hit build, the .NET MS build tools automatically generate every single required platform-specific asset at the exact correct resolution and inject them into the native project heads. The single project system massively reduces the cognitive load of cross-platform development.
asset generation is a nice quality of life feature. I will give you that. It saves an afternoon. But generating an icon is the easy part. Writing the code and getting a PNG on the screen is table stakes. Getting the application to actually compile and pass the strict, uncompromising OS deployment restrictions, that is where cross-platform frameworks face their harshest test. And this brings us to what I call the deployment gauntlet.
You are referring to ahead-of-time compilation, specifically Apple's restrictions.
Precisely. Apple fundamentally prioritizes device security and battery life. Because of this, Apple strictly bans just-in-time, or JIT, compilation on iOS devices.
Explain exactly what JIT is and why Apple bans it, just for the context of our web developers listening.
Sure. When you run a C# app on your Windows machine or a web server, the .NET runtime uses JIT. It reads the intermediate C# code, compiles it into machine code right there on the fly, allocates memory in the RAM, marks that memory as executable, and then runs it.
Right.
Apple says absolutely not. Marking RAM as executable at runtime is a massive security vulnerability, because malicious code could theoretically inject itself into that memory space and run. Therefore, on an iPhone, all code must be fully compiled into native ARM machine code before it ever touches the device.
Hence, ahead-of-time compilation.
Yes. This forces the .NET developer to use mono ahead-of-time compilation, or the newer native AOT. And this is where the C# ecosystem clashes violently with the mobile ecosystem.
The clash you are talking about is runtime reflection.
Yes. C# developers love reflection. It is deeply ingrained in the web ecosystem. Reflection is when code inspects itself at runtime. If that solo developer is using standard .NET libraries that rely on dynamic code generation, like legacy JSON serializers, entity framework, or dynamic dependency injection containers, their app will simply crash in production on an iPhone.
Because the AOT compiler strips it out.
Exactly. The AOT compiler, which we call the linker, looks at the code before it goes to the phone. It says, I cannot statically guarantee what this reflection code is going to do, so I am going to strip it out to be safe. Resolving trim and AOT warnings in a CI pipeline is an absolute nightmare. You get cryptic MSBuild messages saying a method was removed, and you have to painstakingly audit your entire dependency tree to figure out what broke.
I hear the frustration, I really do, but I actually welcome the shift to AOT. It forces better coding practices. The era of heavy reflection-based libraries is ending, and MAUI offers modern, elegant solutions to all of these issues. We do not have to rely on reflection anymore.
That's a bold claim.
Let's look at the data binding layer. Instead of traditional reflection-based XAML binding, MAUI introduces dex.datatype. You explicitly declare the type of the view model in the UI markup. This provides compile time binding validation. The compiler knows exactly what property maps to what UI element, completely eliminating reflection lookups and making it fully trim safe.
Okay, but what about JSON? Parsing financial APIs requires heavy JSON serialization.
Instead of relying on runtime reflection, modern .NET uses source generators.
Source generators are a massive paradigm shift. They can be very complex to implement for a solo dev.
But they are incredible. By simply implementing a partial class with the JSON serialization context attribute, the .NET compiler analyzes your data models during the build process. It actually writes the optimized C# serialization code for you before the app is even compiled.
Right. It generates the code.
The resulting code has zero runtime reflection. It is entirely trim safe and AOT compatible, even for passing data between pages. In older frameworks, you used reflection-based query property attributes. Now we just implement the iQuery attributable interface. We pass a dictionary of data securely and natively. MAUI has solved the AOT problem if you follow the modern patterns.
If you follow the modern patterns, that is a massive catch. You are assuming this solo developer has the time and expertise to architect everything perfectly from scratch, utilizing only the absolute latest .NET 8 or .NET 9 features.
Well, they should be.
But in the real world, developers rely on NuGet packages. A financial app needs PDF generators for statements, charting libraries for dashboards, complex analytical tools. If even one critical third-party library deep in your dependency tree is not trim safe, your native AOT dream falls apart. You either have to write custom linker XML files to preserve the code, which bloats your app size, or you have to abandon the library entirely.
But if they do architect it correctly, if they adhere to modern .NET structures using statically analyzable DI registrations and source generators, doesn't native AOT actually become a superpower?
A superpower?
Yes. When configured correctly, native AOT gives us incredible startup times. The app launches instantly because we are stripping out the entire mono runtime VM and linking directly to the bare metal of the device. We get payload sizes that absolutely rival pure native Swift apps.
It is a superpower, yes. But it is a superpower that requires a PhD in MS Build to configure correctly in a CI/CD pipeline. But look, let's move past compilation. Let's talk about the absolute most critical aspect of this specific application scenario. Security.
Absolutely.
Because for a student financial app, fast startup times and small payload sizes are completely meaningless without ironclad security. We have to evaluate how safely and reliably we can integrate device-level security features in a hybrid framework.
I agree completely. Security is non-negotiable. If we cannot secure the app, the framework is a failure.
Then you have to admit that relying on MAUI for security is a profound maintenance nightmare. Let's start with the basics. Biometric authentication. Face ID on iOS, fingerprint on Android. You want the student to open the app and instantly authenticate?
Sure.
There is no built-in MAUI API for biometrics. Microsoft is not provided in the core library. To implement this, the solo developer has to rely on third-party open-source plugins, like plugin.maui.biometric. Now, I have deep respect for open-source maintainers, but these plugins are community-driven.
They are usually very well maintained.
Usually, yes. But when Apple releases iOS 18 or Google releases Android 15, they frequently change the underlying security behaviors of the biometric prompt or local authentication frameworks. These community plugins often break during major OS updates. A financial institution cannot afford to tell its users, "Sorry, Face ID is down this week," until an open source maintainer has time to update their GitHub repository.
Okay, the community plugins in the .NET ecosystem are historically highly reliable and quickly updated. However, even if your security compliance team prefers not to use third-party packages, the pattern for accessing native features in MAUI is incredibly straightforward.
You're going to say write it yourself?
Exactly. You don't need a plugin. You define an iBiometric service interface in your shared C# code. Then, in the Platforms folder, you write a class that implements that interface using the standard Apple LA Context APIs invoked directly from C#. You do the same in the Android folder using Biometric Prompt. You retain complete, absolute control over the native security APIs, but you orchestrate them from your unified C# layer.
But listen to what you just said. You write it using standard Apple APIs. To write that implementation, the developer has to go learn how the native LA context works anyway. They didn't save any cognitive load. But honestly, the real pain isn't just biometrics. It is enterprise security, specifically certificate pinning.
This is a critical topic. Let's define it for everyone. Certificate pinning is how we guarantee the app is talking to the legitimate banking server and not a man-in-the-middle proxy.
Exactly. Imagine a student opens the app on a public campus Wi-Fi network. A malicious actor has set up a rogue router and is trying to intercept the HTTPS traffic to steal the OAuth tokens. Standard HTTPS checks the certificate against the device's trust store, but if the attacker somehow installed a rogue root certificate on the device, standard HTTPS will trust it.
Right. So certificate pinning says, do not trust the device's root store. Only accept the connection if the server's public key matches this exact cryptographic hash I have hard-coded into the app.
Right.
Implementing this properly on Android is remarkably difficult. To do it right at the OS level, developers often rely on robust, native Java libraries like TrustKit. To use TrustKit Android.arr in MAUI, the solo developer has to create an Android binding library.
Oh, binding libraries.
Have you ever built a binding library? It is agonizing. You have to take the compiled java.arr file, feed it into the MAUI build system, and try to generate C# wrappers. You have to translate Java metadata into C# XML. You have to resolve missing interfaces, fight name collisions, and wrestle with the build system just to wrap a basic security library. It is a massive time sink.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that line of reasoning at all, because you are approaching the problem with a legacy mindset. We do not need a messy Java binding library for certificate pinning in a modern .NET application.
How else do you enforce the pin at the network layer if you aren't using the native Android security configuration?
We do it natively within the .NET execution environment. We bypass the Android networking stack entirely for our API calls. Can't we simply use the HTTP client handler about service certificate custom validation callback in C#?
Wait, just in the HTTP client?
Yes. When our HTTP client makes a request, this callback allows us to intercept the TLS handshake before any data is actually transmitted. We get the X59 certificate chain right there in managed C# code. We extract the public key, we hash it, and we compare it against our hard-coded pins. We dynamically accept or reject the connection entirely within our managed C# domain.
Okay.
We do not need TrustKit. We do not need binding libraries. We keep our security logic centralized, highly observable, and strictly inside our .NET boundary. It is elegant and incredibly secure.
That is a brilliant solution for your explicit HTTP calls. Yes, that works beautifully for C#. But you have forgotten the core architecture we are debating today, MAUI Blazor Hybrid. What about the Blazor Web View?
What do you mean?
If your hybrid app loads web resources, fetches images, or makes background JavaScript fetch requests from within the WebView's HTML context, that traffic does not route through your managed C# HTTP handler.
Ah.
The WebView uses the underlying OS network stack, WK Web Networking on iOS and Chromium Networking on Android. Your elegant managed C# certificate pinning is completely bypassed by the WebView. To pin the traffic originating from the UI layer, you are right back to wrestling with native configurations. You have to configure NS app transport security dictionaries on iOS and network security configuration XML files on Android. You are fighting on two fronts again.
And that is exactly why we architect the app with strict boundaries. In a well-designed Blazor hybrid financial application, the Blazor layer only handles UI rendering and local component state.
It shouldn't fetch data?
Never. Any external network calls, any data fetching, any authentication requests, all of it is strictly passed through the local interop channel to the native MAUI layer. The JavaScript inside the WebView is never allowed to make an external network request.
Okay, so it delegates it.
Right. The Blazor UI invokes a C# service interface. That C# service makes the pinned HotDTP request, validates the TLS handshake, retrieves the secure data, and passes it back over the interop channel to the UI. By centralizing all network traffic in the native MAUI layer, we can also seamlessly integrate with enterprise-grade Microsoft libraries like MSAL.NET for authentication.
MSAL, the Microsoft Authentication Library. I will admit, integrating enterprise SSO on mobile is traditionally brutal.
And it is where MAUI shines. We drop the MSAL.NET Nuka package into our shared project. We use the withbroker extension method in our client builder. Do you know what withbroker does under the hood?
It talks to the authenticator app, right?
Exactly. It physically reaches out via the OS inter-process communication channels to the Microsoft Authenticator app or the Intune company portal already installed on the user's phone. It hijacks that established cryptographic trust. We get single sign-on. We enforce enterprise conditional access policies, like requiring the device to be compliant before issuing a token, and we handle background token refresh cycles, all within about 10 lines of shared C# code.
That is impressive.
This level of enterprise security integration is absolutely unparalleled. Trying to orchestrate that manually, writing separate integration logic for the iOS broker in Swift and the Android broker in Kotlin, would take a solo developer weeks, if not months.
It is a powerful library, and with Broker as a fantastic API, I can see that point entirely. When the Microsoft ecosystem aligns, it is beautiful. but step back and look at the architecture you just described.
I think it's a solid architecture.
To make this hybrid app secure and performant, the Solo developer has to route all WebView traffic through C# interfaces. They have to manage dual navigation stacks because Blazor has its own internal routing completely separate from the MAUI shell navigation. They have to constantly guard against JNI memory leaks, flatten visual trees, intercept on-trim memory to force garbage collection, and meticulously manage the synchronization context with Tri-Dispatch Async.
It sounds like a lot, but...
It just highlights my core argument. The cognitive load of debugging dual runtimes, managing WebView network quirks, and fighting compilation linkers ultimately destroys the promised productivity. The Solo developer spends their time building complex, fragile bridges between runtimes instead of building actual features for the students.
I disagree.
Is the more honest, predictable path. When a native app crashes, the stack trace tells you exactly why. When a hybrid app crashes, you are guessing which side of the bridge collapsed.
Well, let me summarize my position by pointing back to the reality of the Solo developer's constraints. The architectural unity of MAUI Blazor Hybrid just cannot be overstated. We are talking about a single developer sharing dependency injection containers, Razor UA components, data models, and centralized C# security logic between their web dashboard and their mobile application.
But with all that friction...
The friction you described exists. I do not deny the complexity of the JNI or AOT linking, but that friction is surmountable with the right architectural patterns. The ability to maintain one cohesive code base far outweighs the learning curve of managing those specific mobile constraints.
We can at least agree on one fundamental truth here. Regardless of the chosen path, mobile development is inherently deeply complex.
Oh, completely.
Whether you use MAUI, Blazor Hybrid, or pure native, a developer must have a profound understanding of platform-specific life cycles. You have to understand how to handle backgrounding limits, how to implement on-trim memory, and how the OS manages battery life. You cannot use a cross-platform framework to completely escape the reality of the underlying operating system.
Precisely. The abstraction is a tool, not a shield. You must understand iOS entitlements, app transport security, and Android permissions. The platform always matters. And the more you respect the platform, the better your hybrid app will perform.
The complexity of modern mobile architecture is immense, especially when handling sensitive data. For anyone listening and facing this exact architectural crossroads, we highly suggest you dive deeper into your own source material. Weigh your team's existing web expertise against your strict performance constraints, your security compliance needs, and your memory requirements before choosing an architecture.
There's always more to explore, and the blueprints of software architecture will always require a bit of interpretation and adaptation to your specific scenario. We don't declare definitive winners here, but rather aim to illuminate the landscape, including all its hidden memory limits and deployment gauntlets, so you can navigate those technical waters yourself. Thank you for joining us on The Debate.